Hi, everyone. I'm Dr. Jillian Murphy, a naturopath, speaker, educator, and coach, and this is Food Freedom Body Love, a podcast I put together to help you make peace with food, body image, and weight so you can kick your all-consuming, exhausting weight control, food obsession habits and start living your best, healthiest life. Well, it's here, and I couldn't be more excited. Today is the first episode of the Beyond Weight series here on the Food Freedom Body Love podcast. It's a series where we're asking the question, is it possible to manage health concerns without focusing on weight loss, food restriction, and body shame? And while we're going to dig into some really specific health issues in the coming episodes, I wanted to kick off the series with a more overarching conversation about weight-independent healthcare, about this concept of health at every size, which is really just a very simple idea, which is that we can help optimize anyone's health by working with their body and without encouraging harmful practices that don't work out and leave people in a worse position than they were before. And so today I thought that I would bring on Dr. Leslie Williams-Blackwell. She is a board certified family medicine physician and a certified eating disorder specialist. And she's an advocate for diversity and inclusivity in healthcare. After years of working in the mental health field, she noted that many of the issues she was seeing in her adult and adolescent patients were linked to negative messages that they internalized since early childhood about their appearance. And she discovered that it was difficult to combat these ingrained messages. She also observed her own young daughter starting to struggle with body image issues and feeling self-conscious about her size. And so Dr. Williams-Blackwell decided to switch gears and focus her energy from eating disorder and mental health treatment to prevention. She determined that the best way to address these concerns was to become an advocate for a positive body image and size diversity in young children. And her hope is that this approach will ultimately improve the physical and mental well-being of children as well as adults. If you have been listening to the podcast for a while, you know that that's my hope as well. It's the whole purpose of everything that I do. And so today, Dr. Williams-Blackwell and I are going to kick off this podcast series with a conversation about health at every size within the medical field, the opposition to it, the barrier to approaching health in a weight-neutral way, and some ideas for the way forward. I hope you enjoy this episode and all of the episodes to come. And if you have any thoughts, insights, questions, anything, feel free to reach out to me at hello@foodfreedombodylove.com. But for now, let's dig into this episode with Dr. Leslie Williams-Blackwell. Hi, Dr. Leslie. Thank you so much for coming on the show. I'm so excited to have you.
Oh, thank you so much for the invitation. I'm happy to be here.
Yeah, I'm really thrilled. So this series, we're talking about health beyond weight and also, you know, not just beyond weight, but beyond food restriction and beyond shame and individual blame when it comes to health. And I just wanted to bring you on to bring you into the conversation about the, you know, kind of the overarching issues that we have in the current health and wellness sphere, and how we can do better, for our patients and our clients. So just to kick things off, maybe you could just tell us a little bit about you and your career, what you work with, and how you started working in a weight independent way.
Okay, sure. So my training is in family medicine. I always knew I wanted to go into medicine, but I think I was able to hone in more on family medicine because I loved the holistic approach. And that was something that really appealed to me. I think that when I finished my training, I definitely was interested in this whole kind of idea of mind, body, soul, you know, like kind of connecting all the dots, in particular as it relates to women, because I just noticed so many physical and mental health concerns seemed to be somewhat connected, and food was often a big role in there. And I had seen that played out in my own life, not personally, but more so as I would see those around me. And so I really felt like there was a way to kind of heal that for women in particular, but for people in general. And so that's kind of what brought me into the field. When I was looking for job placement after residency, I was introduced to looking at this through the eating disorder lens. And so that's what initially got me working at an inpatient eating disorder treatment center. And then I've kind of gone on to do a number of different things in the field, but just really have a passion for this idea of health equity and looking at health through a weight neutral lens.
Can you explain just for the listeners who may, this might be new for them, this idea of health equity, like what does that mean for you?
I think for me, it just means the idea that every person, regardless of their size, shape, color, gender, should have access to good healthcare, and they should be treated in an equitable way, and healthcare should not be kind of provided based on the patient's means, or people should not be kind of limited in their access to healthcare based on different personal characteristics, if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm. And what are some of the challenges that you still or that you currently see when it comes to health equity and health access? I know the states, you know, I'm in Canada, so our medical system is a little different, but just where you are, like what are some of the biggest issues at the moment?
I think that some big issues that I see are access to healthcare for people that struggle with mental health issues in general. I think that there's just inadequate resources and oftentimes not a lot of understanding about mental health issues. And so patients often are struggling with co-occurring severe medical issues as well as severe mental health issues, and it makes it difficult for them to get optimized care. So there has been a push to kind of more clinics where you can kind of under one roof get your medical and mental health care taken care of, but it's still not widespread, and I just still see that as being a big obstacle. I think definitely when it comes to finances, that continues to be an issue for people of the lower socioeconomic status, feeling that they can adequately access healthcare in a meaningful way. So I think those are some of the obstacles. I think you still see obstacles in terms of kind of like overall gender health and people having an understanding of, you know, the LGBTQ+ and how to provide adequate healthcare in a respectful and caring way. I see issues with weight stigma within the healthcare society and just having a lot of obstacles and a lot of, frankly, disdain for people who are living in larger bodies and feeling that that is a reflection of their health. And as a result, the only thing that should be spoken about with them in a meaningful way is how they need to make their body smaller instead of looking at how we can help everyone, regardless of their size, kind of achieve what optimal health means for them. So,
yeah. And so how did you find Health at Every Size? I mean, obviously it's clear that you started to notice the stigma within your work, but how did you find this like alternative model? Because it's still, I mean, I think when we're in it, I'm really in it. So I feel like it's everywhere. And then every now and then I take a step back, whether it's because I'm working with someone new and it's new for them, or talking to a healthcare practitioner and it's new for them. But I just get reminded that this is still very fringe, this idea that weight and health are not directly tangled and related at all times. So I'm always interested to hear how people found it.
Yeah, that's an excellent question. I think through my initial kind of involvement with the Binge Eating Disorder Association and ASDA, the Association for Size, Diversity, and Health, is some of the things that kind of introduced me to Health at Every Size and just some of the great work that Deb Burghardt has done in that space. And so it really kind of opened my eyes to a different approach to take with patients. And it is still very fringe. I know particularly in the medical community, it is not well accepted. People do not want to hear about it. They there's just a lot of opposition because it's this idea that you cannot be healthy and live in a larger body, and that as a medical provider, your sole goal should be to help people achieve a smaller size.
Mm-hmm. First and foremost, that's the priority. Correct. Right. And how do you, I know that you do work. I've seen some webinars of yours talking about sort of coaching medical professionals through this. So like fat phobic or weight stigmatizing practitioners. Can you talk a little bit about that? Like, how do you do that? What's the approach? How are you getting through to those who you get through to?
Right. I think that one of my sneaky approaches is that I will kind of say, hey, let's sit down and have a conversation about a new way to treat obesity. Right. And I'm putting up quotes.
Yeah.
Because oftentimes that perks up medical practitioners' interest is like they're always looking for some way to treat obesity, you know?
Right.
And that is just like a buzzword. And then once they kind of come and hear me speak, I talk about how the term is often inappropriately labeling. That we will label patients that are of a certain BMI, even if they have no associated health issues. And I explain to them kind of the historical framework of the BMI, how it's a very kind of archaic tool that was never meant to be a global marker of health. And so I kind of talk with them about like, what other tools are you using, you know,
yeah.
from ancient times to help you make global decisions on how you kind of guide your patient's health? Like none. So why is it that you feel so really married to this particular tool that is not adequately provide, you know, overall data? I speak with them about the idea that the approaches that we're using aren't working. I'm like, if you had a patient with, you know, a terminal illness and you had decades of data to support the fact that your particular cure, again, putting up quotes, was not effective, would you continue to prescribe that? In any other instance, that would be considered malpractice. But for some reason, when it comes to patients in larger bodies and prescribing weight loss, we feel this moral obligation to continue to do so, even when the data does not support that it is sustainable for the long term, or that when you look at overall long-term health effects, that we have significantly decreased, you know, morbidity and mortality in all cases. That oftentimes the research supports the fact that patients regain oftentimes in excess of what their baseline weight was, and that if we were to approach them from a different perspective in terms of looking at other markers of health, like whatever the outcome is that we're trying to address. For instance, weight in and of itself is not the issue. The idea is that a higher weight maybe predisposes you to having a higher blood pressure or higher cholesterol or some of these other downstream effects. So why wouldn't we just focus on those particular data points and try to, you know, look at ways to improve them that are weight neutral? Like increasing activity has been shown to improve some of those things, regardless of whether or not the weight changes. So why wouldn't that be the prescription rather than singularly focusing on weight loss when frequently that, even when a patient, I've had patients that they've changed their lifestyle completely, right? They've become more active. They're eating a wider variety of foods. They're, you know, just more engaged in day-to-day life and they're feeling better about themselves. And all of those markers are better, but their weight is unchanged. And then they get discouraged. They feel like it's all for naught, that they haven't had any progress because that was the only data point that they were looking at. And then they will frequently kind of go back to what their past maybe, you know, eating or lifestyle behaviors were that were comfortable to them because they feel frustrated because they're not seeing success.
Right. It's not working.
At the wrong marker. Yeah.
Right. It's and it's like, working. Meanwhile, the framework, yeah. the metric was off from the beginning.
Exactly.
Right. Right. So how has this shifted your work? Like finding health at every size, what is the shift in your day-to-day work? How is it different? How does it look different?
I think in terms of my day-to-day work, for instance, when I meet with a patient, oftentimes, you know, weight is the first thing that you take. You take it in a very public way. It is something that there's a lot of hyper-focus on, where I think with my work with the patients, I will typically do a blind weight. I don't show them the weight. We don't necessarily discuss the weight unless it has to do with like overall trends that we're looking at. And I kind of de-villainize, if you will, weight. It's interesting, even like my husband was recently going for a physical and he hadn't been for his annual in a long time. And that was his one bit of angst beforehand. He's got, you know, he's overall very, very healthy, has a few kind of medical issues that he needed to address, but he was like, I know they're going to tell me I need to lose weight. And I'm like, if that's the only thing they have to talk to you about, then we need to find you a new provider. Because, you know, the fact that you bike a zillion miles a week, that you, you know, eat a really balanced diet, you know, it's just like, it's insane. But people have a lot of anxiety. And that's another reason why this idea of weight stigma really has a negative impact on health, because people are so fearful of how their providers are going to respond to their weight. Oftentimes they'll avoid getting care altogether. Who wants to go get care when you feel like you're going to get shamed for your weight? And so again, kind of taking that off center stage and really focusing on the patient's overall health goals, I think is going to make it more accessible for people to seek care and to want to continue coming back and to want to kind of work collectively on goals that help them to maintain the healthiest life possible.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I've been doing this work for maybe about 8 years now, and I still, as like a fairly medium-sized person, have that little bit of shame or that little bit of worry when I go mm-hmm. into the doctor's office. Like, it's very real. And I think it's just because weight is so tied up in this idea of individual responsibility and blame. And that if I'm too high on that BMI scale, that, like you said, they're very married to, although I will say that my doctor's pretty amazing and isn't that married to it. She really recognizes, you know, individual health behaviors and efforts and other markers. But because there's that feeling, right, of like, I'm to blame if I'm somehow not measuring up on this archaic scale that was never meant to really work for me, it's my fault. And there's a lot of, yeah, it just feels awful. And so I can only imagine what it must feel like when there's those like layers of issues as well, when there is potentially something like diabetes or high blood pressure layered onto it, how much more anxiety there must be to go in and get these things checked and to
absolutely
to want your health to be taken seriously, but for the person on the other side of it to really just be focused on weight and not on your overall health or picture or, you know, whatever else happens to be going on in your life.
Absolutely. And I think the thing that's interesting is that if you have patients that are considered quote unquote, you know, within the normal range of that weight or BMI scale, who also have diabetes, hypertension, other medical issues, and they themselves are overall, you know, living a healthy lifestyle, it's like they're absolved of that, right? It's like, oh, well, you're doing everything you can. It's clearly genetics. Like, you know, let's just go ahead and put you, it's like, it's approached in a much more neutral fashion versus you could be having all those same, kind of lifestyle, you know, choices in terms of like your eating, your exercise, your physical and mental health, but live in a larger body just genetically, and then have that same issue. And all of a sudden you are attributed to so much personal blame versus kind of looking at it like you would anything else that could potentially happen genetically through no fault of your own. Mm-hmm. So it really is kind of, a frustrating duality that we have currently within the medical profession that I'm hoping will evolve into something that is overall more globally helpful for the patients.
Yeah, just like high levels of scrutiny. I recorded another episode last week with an eating disorder professional, and just like the number of people whose eating disorders or eating issues or are missed or misdiagnosed because when they report what they're eating or how they're moving, they're not believed or it's not taken seriously? Are there, like, those are just a few off the top of my head. Any other major, like, major harm that you regularly see when weight is the primary metric of success and health?
I definitely see it in pediatrics quite a bit, where, you know, patients are falling, you know, for instance, above their overall growth chart, and the doctor may just say, you need to lose weight, you know, without looking at this from a global perspective. What's going on in their home life? What does their family genetics look like? What are their eating habits look like? What is their activity? You know what I mean? Kind of taking this global perspective. But again, this idea of attributing personal responsibility to a child that doesn't really have a lot of impact in terms of, you know, their day-to-day activities. And so then kids internalize that. And I've seen so many kids that's where their eating disorder started, right? Kid internalized that. They were shamed at the doctor's office. They didn't know what to do. So they just stopped eating. And they just had a significant fear around eating and being too big and having that experience. And so I think that's another area of vulnerability and opportunity for us to kind of really push the envelope with weight neutral care, you know, blind, you know, still at my kid's pediatrician's office, the scale is out in front of everyone. And they kind of, you know, I have to be very proactive to tell them, please don't weigh my children where they can see the weight. Please don't tell them their weight. I have three kids. No matter what the data point is, they're going to compete and they're going to see, you know, there's going to be some kind of negative impact in terms of their weight. And so I'm very thoughtful about not telling them their weight. It's not necessary information for them to know and to really kind of neutralize that for them.
Yeah, it's such a tough thing because I think, you know, in an ideal world, we would be able to use that piece of information really objectively. But how? I mean, there's no, every time I sit down to watch a movie with my kids, and I have two kids, two really different body types. Every time I sit down, there's jokes about fatness, about weight, all really reinforcing this like storyline that it's, if somebody's in a bigger body, it's clearly because they ate too much and didn't exercise enough. You know, it just keeps confirming this story over and over and over again. And yeah, just this idea that these movies are reinforcing this storyline, and also some of the nutrition and health information that they're getting at school is reinforcing this storyline around weight. So it would be great if kids could see their weight and it would just be the same as their height or their, you know, different other markers of health, but it's just not. It's not right now. And so I'm the same. I'm quite thoughtful about it. It doesn't mean that I ignore it or I don't consider it. We do, but in a way where they don't need to be involved because they just can't use that information properly. There's too much other misinformation out there, right?
Absolutely. Yeah. It hasn't been that long ago that here in the States, they were weighing kids and, you know, sending them home with a letter if your BMI was above a certain threshold and, you know, really kind of just taking a very shaming approach to this idea of the war on childhood obesity and how to best approach that. And just, you know, the research that came from that just shows that it was really quite harmful and not something that is then going to result in better lifestyle choices. It's just not.
Right, right. Like the outcomes down the line are much worse, not better. Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. And so, okay. So you were saying, you know, I was asking about how your practice looks different since you've approached this, you know, weight neutral sort of perspective. So blind weighing, what, anything else? Like what are the other major things that look differently potentially in your office?
I think that, like, for instance, in a lot of the healthcare records now, the electronic healthcare records, it kind of pops up where if a person's BMI is over a certain threshold that you have to like reflect that you're doing some type of intervention. So, you know, that kind of ignoring that, if you will. I think some of the other things are really kind of speaking with the patients, which is not really all that radical about what are their healthcare goals. And if they come in and they say, I just want to lose weight, why do you want to lose weight? Like what is it that's going to make your life better? And for instance, I had a patient where you know, just wanted to go on vacation and enjoy herself and wear a bikini. Why is this thing keeping you from enjoying yourself and going on vacation? If there's no other issue, like, then we need to work on this from a psychological perspective in terms of what are the stumbling blocks, because there really isn't anything physically keeping you from wearing a bikini and enjoying your vacation. It's your own kind of mental minefield that is standing in the way, and losing weight isn't necessarily going to fix that. And so we need to address it from a different perspective.
Yeah. And so I think that, you know, one of the foundations of changing from, I mean, weight, I think, is appealing in a system like the medical system as a metric of success, because it's quite quick. It's like you do it and it's quick. And then you just make a statement, like you were saying, like you have to lose weight, and then you send people on their way. And when we think about actually stepping back and being like, whoa, 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 number one, that doesn't often work. Number two, it's really harmful and not accessible for most people. And that the answer is actually communicating with people and getting to know them and understanding everything that's happening in their life and what their actual goals are, which could be really different from one person right. to the next, and allowing that to be okay, allowing people to have different health goals, you know, based on how much interest and time and accessibility they have to things like, you know, caring about food or exercise or whatever it is. I can only imagine that it might be challenging to get people to find a way to work this in, or is it? I guess what I'm asking is it hard?
No, I think so. I think that time is a definite factor in terms of, you know, I hear that from providers. It's like, I really don't have time to have these long conversations. It's much easier to say, oh, your weight's too high, you need to lose weight, and move on and send them on to someone else to kind of help work through that. So I think that time is a factor. I think that lack of knowledge, like not really knowing what else to offer or how else to approach it. I think hopelessness. I hear a lot of hopelessness from providers because, again, for a long time, the only measure of success they've been looking at is weight. And they've had so many patients that haven't been successful in sustaining that. And so I hear a lot of hopelessness, which I see that as an opportunity, right? If you're continuing to prescribe something and it hasn't been successful and it's making you and your patients feel hopeless, why don't we change course so that you and your patients can both feel more successful and, like be more empowered, you know, in terms of what we're working on together versus like coming in, getting on the scale, it went up, it went down, getting frustrated. And then, you know, let's see you back again in a couple months.
Like, and then feeling like that's a legitimate barrier to being healthy. Right. Like how frustrating is that, you know? And I agree. Like for several years before I found, so I'm a naturopath and I had a general practice, which here in Canada looked like a little bit like a general family practice, but then I switched into, now I predominantly work with kids and adults who are struggling with distorted eating and body image issues. But for those years before, I remember for so many years being on group calls with colleagues and, you know, weight loss was just always the bane of everyone's existence, right? And so I feel the same way. It just felt so freeing to be like, why are we continuing to waste our time focusing on this uncontrollable outcome?
Right.
Totally unpredictable and uncontrollable what's going to happen with the person in front of us when there are all of these like really predictable, beautiful things that we could be doing that are kinder and more compassionate. And yeah, it just, but yeah, but I also work privately. So I don't have that same time constraint that I know a lot of medical doctors have. Right. And I know that there's obviously some issues to access for people who can't afford to necessarily access private care. So what I'm assuming you've kind of already alluded to it, but just big objections that you've gotten from other colleagues or, you know, other healthcare practitioners as you transitioned into working in a weight independent way, like what are some of the big things that you bump up against in your work?
I think that people really in their minds find it to be irresponsible to not focus on weight. It's that they in their minds feel like by doing that, they are kind of doing what's in the patient's best interest, and that they feel it's almost like doing harm not to address it. And so they get very angry with any type of idea that we can approach patients from. It's, they feel like it's their moral responsibility. But again, I think that speaks to their own personal fat phobia. And that is something that providers get very angry when you bring up, like the idea that they may have some implicit bias as it comes to weight, which is to be expected, right? When you think about how we're trained and the way the current status of medical training is and the focus on, you know, weight and kind of personal blame, it's not, and just society in general, not even outside of the medical community.
Absolutely.
So I think, you know, we can normalize that, right? It doesn't make you a bad person. It's to be expected based on how we've all kind of been trained. And so they just really seem to take issue with that. They just really have a hard time accepting that implicit bias might exist, which may also be a stumbling block, because I think for so long they've seen themselves as kind of like altruistic professionals that are doing nothing but what is in the patient's best interest. And it's difficult to accept that there may be some stigma at play.
Yeah. And I think that kind of, it just reminds me of, I'm not sure why, but it just pulls to mind kind of the same conversation that I have with patients or clients with when it comes to parents and sort of saying, like, you know, medical professionals, parents, everyone has the best of intentions. Everyone's trying to do what they think is best, but just being willing to be curious enough to take a look at what you're doing and what the actual outcomes are and to examine, you know, when something hasn't been working or it isn't working. When something just isn't working, how can right. we be curious enough to consider doing something differently while also recognizing that when you were doing something back there, you were also operating on the best knowledge that you had at the time, trying to do the best thing possible, whether it's for your kids or for your patients, right?
Absolutely.
And that there's no shame in like learning that. I mean, I think it all the time. I think back to the first sort of 10 years of my practice and I'm like, oh my God. And at the same time, I'm just so glad that I'm shifting it now, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So, okay. Just a couple questions. And I know you're really busy and I want to respect your time. In terms of a way forward, what do you see as the way forward when it comes to respecting patients and their health goals? Like what do you sort of see in the healthcare field? What's the way forward?
I think the way forward is, first of all, to really try and educate the new professionals that are coming up. I think that I found that professionals that have been in the field for a long time, where a lot of these ideas are very ingrained, it's difficult for them to be flexible enough to see it from a new perspective. But I think that if we train a new generation of providers who are able to, I find the younger generation is a lot more flexible in their thought process about seeing people from a different lens. And so I think that, you know, focusing on the training aspect, I think that really focusing on this idea of patient-centered care, right? If we're able to kind of get at, even if a patient states that their main primary goal is to lose weight, why is that? How is this impacting your life? To get at that and to really help them achieve what their true goal is underneath that, then we have succeeded, right? We have really kind of shifted the course in terms of where we're at now as it relates to these issues and the interaction with the healthcare community.
Yeah, I think that's great, because I think in general, as a society, like you said, younger people in particular, but overall, we're just getting better at being willing to question this like status quo that we've been living in, this like white supremacy and patriarchy and capital. Mm-hmm. Like younger people are just so gender norms. Like we're just getting right. so much better at being able to identify the rigidity in our thinking and how yes. being flexible benefits everyone.
Absolutely.
Being able to be flexible is it. Yeah. And then one thing I just wanted to ask, because I think that like, I'm very excited to talk with all of these different practitioners who are working in weight independent ways when it comes to PCOS and diabetes and hypertension and menopause. I'm just really excited to talk to them about the way that they're approaching those health issues and managing them without ever prescribing weight loss or suggesting restrictive diets. But I know that sometimes, and I'm going to maybe stumble with my question a little bit here, so hopefully I get to it, but it's like, I think sometimes there's still, I just want to recognize that there can be an issue with even a conversation that really focuses on the individual and how the individual should be working and managing their healthcare. Does that make sense? Like there are sometimes bigger systemic cultural factors at work. And if there's anything that you can think of or anything off the top of your head, that's like, just be careful, you know, when you're recommending or talking about health in a really individual way, things that we just want to be careful about in that conversation.
I think I understand your question. I think that some of the stumbling blocks that I come across are patients that genuinely live or work in an environment that puts greater value on a smaller size.
Right.
I can't change that. Do you know what I mean? Like, I've had a patient, for instance, who was a pastor at a church, and she states that when she was in a larger body, she would receive hate mail from her parishioners. Oh, God, and yes. That they really, in a way, equated her body size with her relationship with God, and that it was challenging for her to get better jobs based on her size. And all of that was true. And I can't erase that. And so her rationale for wanting to be in a smaller size was for her to be able to reach her highest potential within that field. And her size was a stumbling block for that. And so some of the work with that was like, what are other ways that you can find fulfillment outside of this field that is kind of trying to force your body to be something that it wasn't necessarily meant to be? But again, needing to recognize that there is true racism, sexism, weightism, things that exist within the world that directly impact people. And so that in and of itself could be a driving force, even if the person themselves feels very comfortable being at a different body shape or size. And so recognizing that, walking alongside with them, helping them to kind of find their voice and really look at this whole piece from a social justice perspective. Mm-hmm. And find that as a motivation to kind of help other people. But we have to be real that it is, as much as we are trying to push the needle forward, a lot of people are working and living within societies that make it very difficult, even if they themselves are ready to embrace this whole concept.
Right, right. And just continuing to meet them where they're at with their mm-hmm. goals and the pressures that they're existing with.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I am going to let you go. I feel like I have so many more questions, but I know that you're busy and I want to just say thank you. And do you want to talk just for one quick sec about your book? I've recommended it many times, but Leslie's written a beautiful book. And do you want to just mention it? And if there's a way for people to find you?
Sure. So yes, I have written a book, Free to Be Me, Self-Love for All Sizes. It's a children's book. It's a passion project of mine based on my daughter's own struggles with her size and my difficulty in finding books that helped her to embrace that. And so decided to collaborate with her to write our own. And so I'm just really excited about that because it just celebrates the fact that kids come in all different sizes, shapes, and colors. And that part of this work is just helping the entire world to accept that fact and to make kids feel loved and accepted. And that in and of itself can be healing and really help children to kind of live their happiest, healthiest lives.
Oh, thanks so much. That's amazing. Thanks, Leslie.
All right. Thank you. Have a great one.
You too. That's it for the first episode of Beyond Weight. I always love to sort of wrap up with a few, you know, after I finish these episodes, I have to re-listen to them in case there's any editing that needs to be done. And then once the episode's all together, I listen again. And so in re-listening, there are often things that pop out to me. And I love to sort of talk about those at the end of an episode. And it's interesting, I'm always interested to hear what's standing out for you too. So you can message me hello@foodfreedombodylove.com if you want to fill me in, or comment on Instagram posts on at foodfreedombodylove on Instagram. But for me in this episode, some things that stood out were mental health access to mental health care being a really big issue when it comes to health equity and understanding that mental health issues are things like depression and anxiety and bipolar disorder and schizophrenia and OCD, and also understanding that there can be some very real mental health issues that pop up when dieting is prescribed over and over and over again for health concerns, when weight loss is the one and only metric of success that you're given, the one and only hope for improving or working with a health condition that you might be dealing with, there are some pretty mild to severe mental health concerns that come from being on the diet roller coaster. And so I just wanted to mention that because that's what this podcast series is about, and understanding that, you know, in the pursuit of physical wellness, we need to be working with our physical body, but we also need to be super aware of how the things that we're doing are affecting our mental and emotional health. What else? I love the way that Leslie, she's just so lovely to talk to. I love the way that she talked about BMI and what an archaic tool it is. And the fact that in medicine, there, you know, we don't stay married to any other outdated archaic tools in the same way. And yet with BMI, we're just stuck on it, even though it's being used in a way it was never meant to be used. And it's not helping achieve better health outcomes, but we stay stuck on it. Yeah, I think those were the big things. Those were the big things. There was one other thing here, but I can't read my own handwriting, which is amazing. But yeah, it was just such a great episode. I love talking about health equity and health access and this overarching idea of getting away from just focusing solely on the individual as being responsible for their own health and taking a bigger picture look at the systems and structures and community care that's available to us. And then, you know, as we move into the other episodes of this series, where we are talking a little bit more about the actions that the individual can take, just to remind you that we're always looking at it through a social justice perspective. And we're always aware of the fact that there are going to be certain things that are not possible or accessible or available to all people. That it's a privileged conversation. And I feel lucky that we're able to have it because we need it, even if it's a privileged conversation. So thank you. Thank you for being here for the first episode. Next week, I believe we're going to dig right in with diabetes. I could be wrong. It's going to be diabetes or PCOS. Either way, I will see you back here next week for episode 2 of Beyond Weight. Have a wonderful week.